Hello and welcome back, everyone, to the Leading Off podcast, the first one where we have a new co-host. It was for a few weeks, it was a bit weird, just kind of me doing it by myself, but this is a much better way. I will now be doing the podcast with Andrew Gibo. So, hi, Andrew, how are you doing?
Doing well, Cooper. Thanks for having me join you here on the show. Like Cooper said, new to the show, excited to get going. If you're on Twitter, go ahead and give me a follow. That's at Gibo with three underscores, and Gibo's G-E-B as in boy O, and again, that's with three underscores. And just a little bit about myself, for those that don't really know much about me, I moved out here from San Francisco to Minneapolis in 2018, started covering the Twins last year for Twins Daily, and now I'm on here with Cooper and ready to get going on this.
Yeah, it's going to be great. And just before we get going here, I just had like the weirdest adrenaline rush, so I was at Target. And I bought a new headset for this. I was gonna wear it. It doesn't even work well, so I gotta fix it. But I get home, and you know those like security things that they have to clip off at the store for like electronics. Yeah, I forgot to do that. So I roll into my driveway, clip it off, and it's beeping extremely loudly. It was horrible. So I jam the scissors into the middle of it and pry it open. And just destroy it. So I hope the cops could, like, I don't know if they're going to roll up here. What's the deal? But, yeah, that's fun.
Hey, Cooper Carlson, stealing things from Target.
I paid. I've got the receipt with me, so I'm good. No, we'll make that clear. I did not steal the headset. All right, jeez. Yeah, that was fun. But, anyway, back to baseball. I just had to
Cooper,
that
Cooper
up.
Carlson can can steal headsets, but the Minnesota Twins cannot steal bases.
That's the title of this episode. It's very long and not really, no one will understand it, but that's what it's going to be titled. No. Moving on to real baseball. The Twins are 7-2. That would be, I think, about 19-5 if you multiply everything by 2.7 like you should be doing every day. But yeah, they just took 3 of 4 from the Cleveland Indians in a series that the pitching for the Twins outpitched the pitching for the Indians, which I didn't really see coming. I assume you also did not see that coming.
With the exception of game one.
Right.
The way Shane Bieber pitched that game, it's hard to even match that. But overall, yeah, the rest of the series, the Minnesota Twins pitching absolutely dominated. I think, you know, they scored, what was it, like 3 runs a game and took 3 out of 4 in that series. You know, pivotal series, like you said, you multiply every game by 2.7, and Twins are in a great position. They're off to a great start. You know, I think 7-2 is their best 9-game stretch since the early 2000s I saw today. So definitely a lot of exciting stuff going on with the Twins, and that was a great series.
Yeah, for sure. I'm pulling up the stats for Cleveland Indians that series. They went 16 for 120, which gives them a 133 average. And on Saturday and Sunday combined, they went just 4 for 58 for just a .069 batting average. So yeah, they were just shut down. And, you know, coming into the series, it was, can the Twins, you know, hit well enough against this Cleveland pitching? But it ended up being the opposite. And the Indians offense just never, they were nothing, just non-existent. Ramirez and Lindor were the only ones that could do something once in a while, and they still couldn't really get anything going.
Yeah,
That
Cleveland team, they have so many holes in that lineup. Like you pointed to, I mean, outside of Ramirez and Lindor, there's really not a lot of punch anywhere in that lineup. Obviously, their pitching's going to carry them as far as they can go. And, I mean, other than a couple of bad innings, you know, the pitching actually did a good job against the Twins. Like we had touched on, they didn't light up the scoreboard necessarily offensively against Cleveland. So the pitching's there. They just can't really hit right now outside of Ramirez and Lindor, which bodes well for the Twins.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. The Twins hitting also. I mean, it hasn't been there all league wide. The hitting's kind of been down, but the Twins, yeah. I mean, if it weren't for the pitching, that series could have easily swung the other way. But just imagine how good this team can be when the bats actually get going. It's gonna be crazy.
Exactly. The fact that they, like we talked about, they're 7-2 right now, and their strong point of the team is their offense and, you know, hitting, and they haven't really been doing that, and yet they're still 7-2.
Yeah, they're hitting like a mediocre team. It's really weird just to imagine, because this team, I mean, obviously the middle of the order is packed with Sano, Donaldson, Cruz, Polanco. I mean, you name it, anywhere in the order, they've got a top 10 hitter at least. It's wild to think about.
Yeah, it's not even just the middle of the lineup. I mean, it's 1-9.
Exactly. Every position they've got, like, a top 10 hitter, and that's being, like, that's given a little leeway because it might be better than top 10 for every position anyway.
And even their backups. I mean, you got Jake Cave in the lineup, and right. he's tearing the cover off the ball. Alex Avila's giving some pop. I mean, there's just no easy out anywhere in the Twins lineup, even when the starters aren't in there.
And, yeah, I got to give him the credit. He's always solid. But, yeah, it's just everyone in that lineup will eventually be packing up, you know, just doing great out there. But right now, I can't rely on them, and the pitching has stepped up in a huge way. Just – well, Homer Bailey, who is now in the IL, but the new additions, Kenta Maeda, Rich Hill, Barrios has had one bad start, one pretty good start. I mean, five innings, it is what it is, but anything was better than his first.
Yeah, his second start, game one against Cleveland there, he pitched well. It was just that one mistake to Lindor. You know, he struck him out the bat before that on elevated fastball. I think he got him another two-strike count, and he wanted to go back and elevate the fastball. He just missed his spot and left it belt high over the plate, and Frankie Lindor just isn't going to miss that pitch.
For sure. And, yeah, the Twins showed, I think, over this series that they – it is small sample size, but that they should be the better team. They did this against the Indians and the Cardinals. Like, they just made them both teams look like nothing. Like, this is easy. Like, the Twins should easily take this division, just be the champions of both Centrals here. Like, no one's going to stop them.
Yes. And I mean, it's only been 9 games in this weird, wacky COVID-influenced season. But this team, it is a very special team. It's obviously things out of our control, but it's a shame we didn't get to watch this team for a full 162-game schedule. If we had a full 162, the way this team looks right now, even with the bats not fully producing, this team could have been very special and arguably one of the best offensive teams like in the history of the game.
Yeah, and it just sucks to hear that, obviously, because this COVID situation just ruined it. And we would have, us Twins fans have kind of been waiting for this for a very long time. So it stings. But hey, 60 games, we still are getting some sort of a season as of right now. I mean, the Twins are still playing. They almost had their whole season thrown away because the Cardinals tested positive, but the Twins got lucky there. But yeah, the COVID situation for the Twins is just league-wide has been awful already, and we're just a couple weeks into the season here.
Exactly. Yep. The COVID situation, like they touched on, it's not just affecting one specific team now. At first, you know, it was the Marlins. They had their outbreak, which threw some wrinkles in the schedule there. But now it's spreading to the Cardinals and just becoming a large issue of how Major League Baseball can try to control this and how fluid, you know, can they be with actually allowing a full 60-game season, you know, to play out in its entirety. And that's going to be a continuous thing that's going to be a problem and something needs to be monitored throughout the season. And just hopefully Major League Baseball can come up with a plan to limit this as much as possible.
Yeah, and Rob Manfred and the other owners, they have said they are, I mean, who knows if they're ever telling the truth or being great. I mean, you know, but he said that he wants to continue, and they're going to do everything they can, basically, to continue. They've implemented seven inning doubleheaders in one day. I mean, I don't know if you're a fan of that, but if you got to get the games in somehow, so that'll be happening for teams like the Marlins, who had 18 of their 30 players test positive. That's just insane. Like, they're going to be throwing together a team of like random free agents you forgot about in a week here when they can finally play again.
How many players on the Marlins would be really recognized to begin with?
That's true. Yeah, 18 of them are. I mean, when can they even play again? Do you know?
I do not know. I haven't seen the update on that. But Miguel Rojas, last I saw, does lead the league in WAR, so they're doing something right.
Really?
Yes.
Haven't they played like 3 games?
Yeah, I forget who the third guy was, but like the top 2 of the 3 WAR leaders right now are Miguel Rojas and Mike Yastrzemski.
Gee, oh yeah. Giants, everyone, yeah. But yeah, the Marlins got horribly unlucky, and then the Cardinals were hit. No one will be as bad as the Marlins, hopefully. I mean, if it is, that's probably, if two teams get it like that, then it's probably shutting down. But the Cardinals are at about, was it 5, I think? I'm not sure on that. Then a couple other teams got hit, like just with 1 or 2, so.
Yeah, the Phillies and everything.
Right.
But, I mean, now you touched on the 7-game doubleheader. I'm for it, like, in 2020. I actually, you know, before the league announced this, I was actually kind of wondering to myself, like, could this be something that we see in this weird, wacky, truncated season where we're just making things up on the go, essentially, to get 60 games in? And if the whole idea is to spend less time on the field, but we need to make up games, the only way to do it is through a doubleheader. If we go to 7 innings to get that done, that's okay. I mean, 5 innings is technically a full game, right? If you have a rain out and you've gone through five innings, it counts, just like we saw on opening night this year. So it's not like we have to play nine for it to be a full game. Like, yes, nine innings is preferred. That's how baseball's played. But we're just figuring this out as we go in 2020. And I think the key to keeping baseball alive and having a full season is to be flexible on things like this and not be too stuck in tradition. If we're stuck in tradition in 2020, that's unfortunate for you because you're going to have a terrible time. 2020 is everything is against tradition in every aspect of life.
So, yeah, I'm in the same boat. I'm cool with it this year. And, you know, depending on what happens, the situation next, I'm good with it. As long as the season is in jeopardy, I guess, if you know what I mean, like if they have to make up games. But in a regular 162 game season where we're not worried about the season ending every single day, I'm not a fan of the seven inning doubleheaders. And I mean, I think they'll go away anyway at that point, but
I completely agree. Yeah. If we're playing a regular 162 and it's just, you know, baseball is normal, there's absolutely no reason for a seven inning doubleheader.
Yeah. One thing, I mean, we didn't really have this plan to talk about, but one thing I don't agree with, like, same premise, I guess, would be the extra inning runner on second base. I think that's just stupid. I don't think it, you know, of course it'll probably speed up the extra innings, but I hate it. What do you think?
Yeah, I agree with you. I think it's sort of a two-part thing. They're kind of covering in this idea of, oh, it's to speed up extra innings so we don't play 14, 15-inning games while we already had a 13-inning game. But I think the larger thing is, obviously, you know, throughout the recent years, Major League Baseball has been trying to do a lot of different things to add more offense to the game, to make, you know, a better fan appeal. And I think this is a way for the league to kind of test this out to then bring it to the table in the next CBA.
Yeah, this is a good year to just test whatever you want to try out. That's a good point.
But am I for it? No. In the 10th inning, no. But if you want to do this in, like, the 12th inning or whatever, yes. Absolutely. We don't need to be having 18-inning ball games. It's just destroys your roster.
Not doing anything all night. I'll watch an 18-inning game.
That's fair. I guess you're not waking up the next day and trying to throw another game, but that's all right.
I know everyone else. I mean, I know you work like 12 hours every day, but, you know, I can stay up a little longer.
That's fair.
Yeah, but no, I get it. They are long, and no one, even me, I mean, after like 15, it's like, all right, let's get out of here. But yeah, I have
sat through, I believe it was a 17-inning ball game in San Francisco that ended with a Buster Posey walk-off, and it was worth every 17 innings.
Like, were you at the stadium?
I was at the stadium. Yeah, I was sitting down the left field line where their bullpens used to be, and sure enough, in the 17th inning, Buster Posey walks it off.
If they lost, would that just been the worst night of your life, or what?
Oh, absolutely. I would have hated myself. Yeah. I think there was more seagulls flying into the stadium than there were fans at that point.
Yeah, that makes sense. What inning does everyone really just get out? Like 12?
Yeah, it's like 12 or 13.
Yeah,
it makes sense. Out.
All right. I mean, longest game I've ever been to has been like 10 innings, ending with a Brian Dozier walk-off grand slam. Don't know how many innings that was actually, but you know, it was not eight. It was not 17 or 18. So I've never done that. Well,
missed a long time to get a ball game.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you got any more to say about the COVID? You want to talk about anything else there? You want to move on?
Let me touch on COVID. I mean, I guess one thing I'll say is I've seen a lot of chatter on Twitter of people like, oh, they should have done a bubble.
Yeah.
Let's be realistic. There's no way Major League Baseball can be played in a bubble. I mean, you know, this NBA bubble in Orlando, they're turning hotel conference rooms into practice facilities. Can't really practice baseball in a conference room.
Right. And they tried to. I mean, the owners brought up the bubble. The players were not at all for it. I don't blame them. I mean, it's also a full season that baseball is playing. NBA and NHL are just doing playoffs, so a bubble will not be nearly as long. MLB would be full 60 games plus playoffs, so it's a little too much to ask.
The only relatively thing close to a bubble they could do is like regional tournament style ball.
Sure.
Have like World Baseball Classics, you know, set up regionally in a WBC format. Just, you know, regionally throughout the states, but even that's a stretch. And I think the way they're doing it right now is the only way they really can do it. And a lot of it, and Manfred said this, and people get all mad at Manfred because that seems to be the fun and cool thing to do, regardless of what he says. But he basically comes out and says, you know, players, managers, owners, like they all need to take this more serious, have stricter protocols.
Right.
And that's true. Like if the players and owners want to actually get through this season, like they have to take this seriously. And it's unfortunate, but essentially it's a go to the ballpark. Go to your hotel and don't do anything else. No going out to nightclubs, none of that. It's unfortunate, but that's what needs to be done.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if it's true, but there's rumors going around that the Marlins players and Cardinals players went to like a club or a bar and then they came back and 18 of them had COVID. Like, and that's just how it's going to work. You got to follow some rules here.
Exactly. You got to just be smart about it and just play the game, go to your hotel and just ride this thing out like the rest of us are doing.
Right. So yeah, the COVID stuff, it sucks. I mean, we've been talking about it all offseason. Feels like it's been 2 years now, but it's been, what, like 6 months since this all began? I don't know, 5 months? It's been weird.
Yeah, I think we're going on. Yeah, we're in the fifth month of it.
Yeah, it sucks. But so yeah, we'll move on from that because it gets exhausting to talk about. We'll move on to our first ever segment with the two of us called Worried or Whatever, where we'll bring up five players, discuss if we're worried about them. It's been nine games now, so a little bit of a sample size. Are we worried about the player, or is it just like whatever that they'll get back on their usual hitting or pitching, depending on who we're talking about? And the five players we'll be talking about are Jose Berríos, Miguel Sano, Josh Donaldson, Byron Buxton, and Mitch Garber. So yeah, we'll get into that here.
All right.
First, you want to talk about Jose Berríos?
Yeah, let's get started with Berríos, number one in the rotation. Let's kick it off with him. You know, I'm not necessarily concerned about Berríos. He had, you know, his first outing was pretty bad, and then he came back and he pitched decent in the second outing against Cleveland, minus the one pitch to Frankie Lindor. The one thing about Berríos, and if you want to call it a concern, is, you know, previously, maybe like last year, the year before that, I had really high expectations for Jose. I thought this guy was going to become a dominant number one front of the rotation ace. He was going to go out there, and every day he takes the mound, you just know that he's going to give you seven innings of one run or, you know, no run baseball and just be that dominant presence, a Garrett Cole, a Justin Verlander, Max Scherzer type pitcher. And as he just gets more into his career, I think we're starting to realize that's not really who Jose is going to be. Like, he's a very good pitcher when mm-hmm. he's on. His stuff is nasty. But with Jose, it's a consistency problem. And one thing that I find myself thinking a lot on days where Jose is taking the mound is, I hope he throws well. I hope he's on his game. And if a guy is going to be your number one ace, you don't really have to hope that he's going to be good. You just know that he's going to go out there and dominate. And I just don't necessarily always feel that with Jose.
Yeah, he's definitely not in like the top tier of pitchers. He's in the one below. Like, even with Shane Bieber coming in, you're like, okay, Shane Bieber's pitching. Let's get like 2 to 3 runs here. Like, can we get him out in the seventh inning? And like, that's lucky. You never have that with Berríos. As a Twins fan, it's been since he came up, every year it's been, all right, this is the year where he will become that pitcher. And I think now it's time for us to just accept he's never going to, and he will always be in this second tier of, like, he'll be an all-star, you know, almost every year he'll be able to compete for that all-star level, but he won't have an ERA in the, you know, low threes or anything. It'll be 3.5 every year, and he'll be solid, but nothing like we all were hoping for him to become, like, the next Cy Young in Minnesota. He'll never exactly. live up to that, I don't think.
He's probably, you know, he can give you 30 starts, 200 innings, right. 200 strikeouts, a 3.5, 3.8 ERA, somewhere in that realm, and be a very, like, a high-quality major league pitcher and a guy any team would want to have. But, yeah, I just don't ever think he's going to evolve into that just elite-level ace.
Yeah, if he never had the hype surrounding him coming up, then we would think of him as, like, you know, an excellent pitcher instead of, for some, you know, disappointment because of what he was supposed to live up to. But if we just look at the stats alone, he's very good. He's a solid, like, top. He's a really good number two, borderline number one, like, for any team.
Exactly.
And, yeah, and that's just as good as you're going to get. Am I worried about him this year? I'm not, just because I now realize what I expect to get out of him, just kind of this hopefully consistent six innings, 2 to 3 earned runs, and then, you know, the offense should get going behind him. So I'm not worried. I just have lower expectations than I have in the past.
Exactly. I'm right there with you on that one.
All right, sweet. So Berríos, you know, it's whatever, just lower expectations. Moving on to Miguel Sano, who came into the season. He missed the first few weeks of spring training too because of he was diagnosed with COVID, so yeah, he had to miss bats, but he got a late start, comes in, and his bat was just not there. He could not catch up to the fastball or anything. A couple games ago, he did hit two pretty big home runs, so what do you think? You worried, or is it whatever with Miguel Sano?
Prior to his two home run game, I was going to be a definite worried on this one. He looked lost at the plate. The timing wasn't there. His hands just looked really slow. Like you said, he couldn't get through on the fastball. And he was within at 94 down the middle, which isn't what you want to see from Miguel Sano. And it looked like he made an adjustment with his hands going into the game where he hit the two home runs. So there's a little more confidence there. Just with Sano, he can be kind of hit or miss. I mean, he's been an all-star previously. And he's also had years where he hit like below the Mendoza line. So is some worry with Sano. I just hope that he can get hot and stay hot. But I am definitely worried that he just may not really get it going on an everyday basis this year. And that could be a problem for the Twins.
Yeah, for me, I'm not worried. With Sano, I see a confidence that he's never really had until last year. With him learning from guys like Cruz and Donaldson, I think he's become a whole different player mentally to where he can, in 2018, if he was slumping like this and not catching up with the ball, he would smash his bat over his knee and he wouldn't learn and he would not catch up and he'd end up being, well, not, in 2018, he literally was sent a single A, but yeah, I mean. Then Nelson Cruz comes and Rocco Baldelli, Josh Donaldson now, and he's going to learn from these pros and these just great people all around him. And he has. And his mindset's excellent now. Mentally, he's stronger than ever. You notice it in his interviews, just the way he carries himself. And I think it's whatever with Miguel Sano. He's going to pick it up. And even if he doesn't, he'll still perform like a really solid everyday player. I mean, I think that's the floor for him now.
True. And I mean, when you have Miguel Sano hitting seventh, you're doing just fine.
Exactly. Like, you don't need, Mike Trout numbers from him or anything. You just need him to be a solid number seven hitter, and you're already doing better than everyone else in the league at that spot. It's crazy, but yeah.
His defense at first, at least early on, has been a little kind of sketchy and questionable at times. Just some decision-making on whether to go for a ball or to stay at the bag. I feel like he's kind of put the defense overall in a compromised position on some of the balls he's tried to field where he gets way too far off the bag. It's an awkward throw with the pitcher covering. So I think he just needs to get more comfortable at first base and understand what balls he can get to, which ones he can't. And then once he kind of settles down there, the bat comes around, he has nothing to worry about with him.
Yeah, the defense at first base storyline actually kind of took a back seat with his hitting struggling. That was kind of something to watch going in, not something that's been mentioned a lot, at least that I've seen. So, yeah, that's a good point to keep watching that. I think he'll be just fine over there once he gets more games in, obviously, but right now it is a bit of a struggle. But with Donaldson taking over at third, at least hopefully if he comes back from injury soon, the defense kind of evens out, in my opinion.
Yep, and people always kind of sleep on, first base defense, and it is important, but we're kind of fortunate that it's not like we're questioning, the shortstop's defense. Right? He's a first baseman. Right. As long as he's not making horrible mistakes, you don't really notice a first baseman's defense.
Yeah, definitely. So Miguel Sano for us is kind of on the borderline of worried or whatever, but I'm not so worried. All right, moving on to the catcher position, Mitch Garver, who has opened the season almost as bad as Sano. I mean, also can't catch up to the fastball for some reason, just not looking anything like what he was last year. And pitchers are definitely pitching him much differently. Every at-bat seems to start with a slider, just like on the outside corner, and like four more, same spot. You're lucky if he sees a fastball at this point. It's just Garver, I mean, he had his excellent year last year, but they're approaching him differently now. Can he adjust, and can he be the same player that he was last year? It's going to be interesting to see.
Certainly. And with Garver, I'm probably going to not make many friends right now in Twins territory, but I am definitely a little worried. Even last year when he had his breakout year, I questioned the legitimacy of it and whether or not this was who he really is as a player. I'm looking at his numbers right here, and just from 2018 to 2019, he goes from having 4.9 WAR to 4.1 in 1 year.
He goes from being Mitch Garver to the greatest catcher of all time in 1 year.
Yeah, his OPS in a single season jumps from 104 to 157. OPS plus, right. Pardon me. His OPS goes from 749, well, about league average, which is decent, but 749 to 995. His slugging jumps from 414 to 630. His home run total jumps from 7 to 31. Right, and it's possible for players to break out at age 28. Late boomers are a thing. I just don't know necessarily if what we saw in 2019 is who Mitch Garver really is, or it was an aberration for him. And could he be somewhere in the middle between 2018 Mitch and 2019? It's possible. So I am a little worried about Mitch Garver and whether or not he's ever actually going to be the guy he was in 2019 again.
Yeah, he's started out slow, and he has to meet expectations of having one of the greatest hitting seasons for a catcher in baseball history. Like, he hasn't got a lot going for him so far, obviously, in that category. But, as you said, late bloomer. I don't think he will ever meet 2019 statistics. Those are just wild. I think he'll probably drop off, I don't know, not quite a bit, but enough that it's noticeable. So I am worried in that sense, but I think it was also unrealistic to expect him to repeat, because it was just, as I said, one of the greatest hitting seasons in history for a catcher. Like, you can't expect him to repeat that year in, year out, especially for a guy who is now 20, is he 29 now?
He's in his age 29 season.
Okay, yeah. Yeah, so I'm with you on that. I don't think he will be the same guy he was last year, but I think he can still be a very productive catcher, like top three hitting catcher in the league. It could just, you know, because there's not that many good hitting catchers anyway. So if he can perform, you know, kind of what he did last year, but I don't expect him to be up there. So I guess I'm worried, but I also didn't expect him to perform, but I'm worried because it's looking like he's just lost at the plate anyway. He has that one home run that he hit today, but that's
it. That was a cookie. Yeah, it was today. It was a cookie. It was a hanging 85 mile an hour slider center cut.
Yeah, like you hope he can get that one out. And
if you can't get good wood on that, what are you doing?
Exactly. And he hasn't really this season. He's probably had that pitch before. I've seen him miss that pitch a few times this year already. So he was bound to get one. Now let's see if he can continue.
Yeah, and I think kind of what we said about, you know, Barrios with expectations, I think it's the same conversation now with Mitch Garver as well. I think if Twins fans expect Mitch Garver to be the 2019 Mitch Garver every single year, they're going to be very disappointed. But if they understand there's going to be regression, okay, maybe he won't have a 995 OPS. Maybe he has an 850 OPS. That's okay. And people just need to kind of tamper their expectations a little bit with Mitch Garver.
Yeah, because he came into the season with expectations. Barrios came in with expectations of Cy Young. Garver came in with expectations of being Babe Ruth. Like, slow down a little.
Exactly. We have the next Mike Piazza. Well,
exactly. Like that was last year. He was being compared to Mike Piazza, literally. So I know he's obviously better than a Buster Posey ever will be or ever has been.
Wow. Okay.
I'm just kidding.
We're gonna go there.
I just had to get a reaction out of you.
The man has a batting title and an MVP and three rings. Come on now.
Yeah, that's nothing. Him and his World Series titles can go somewhere else.
Okay.
No. But yeah, Mitch Garver, I'm worried there. Moving on to number four, we got Josh Donaldson, who is now out with a concerning calf injury that they listed as day-to-day, but it's something he's dealt with a lot in the past. So hopefully it doesn't linger. And even before the injury, he was struggling to get good wood on the ball. So what do you think about Donaldson?
I'm not worried about Josh Donaldson. He's off to a slow start. Absolutely. There's no denying that. His timing just looks really off, especially on the fastballs. He just kind of what I said about Miguel Sano. He just can't really get through right now. But Josh Donaldson's a very well-proven hitter. This guy's been doing this for a long time at a very elite level. He's going to get his timing right. He's going to get it figured out. I'm not worried at all about Josh Donaldson. The only thing I'm worried about would be his recent injury. That's, you know, cut him out of the last couple of games. But beyond the injury, offensively, anything like that, I'm not worried about Josh Donaldson.
Okay. Yeah, that's definitely – I'm on the same boat. I am worried about the injury that could keep him out for a couple weeks. And in a 60-game sprint season, that's, you know, 2.7 times as important. It's a number I'll bring up a lot because it's really annoying to do the math on. But yeah.
Yeah, I'm going to rely on you for the math on that one too.
I'll have to pull up my you'll have to talk while I do the math in my calculator or in my head. But no. Yeah. I think he will obviously figure it out at the plate because he has won an MVP. He's a great hitter. He was just signed to a 4-year, $100 million contract. He better figure it out at the plate.
Yeah, I mean, there's going to be, you know, pressure that comes along with signing a big deal like that. Especially coming over to a team like Minnesota and being become one of the largest free agent acquisitions this franchise has ever had. Yeah, tremendous amount of pressure on him. I'm sure he's pressing a little bit. He wants to make a good impression. But again, Josh Donaldson is a veteran. He's been around a long time. He's won an MVP. He's played at a very elite level. I'm not concerned about him in the long run.
Right. Yeah. With all the fans at Target Field, it has been sold out since his debut. So it's hard. The pressure's probably getting into him. You've heard all that noise, that crowd noise.
Yeah. Oh, man, those cardboard cutouts really got to pipe it down. It's hard to watch the broadcast sometimes.
The Joe Mauer cardboard cutout's getting a little too crazy for me.
Jeez, Joe, keep it down, man.
Right, yeah. But yeah, we're in the same boat there. Not worried about Donaldson, but we are worried about the injury, because that could linger for too long. Moving on to our final person on this, someone we just kind of added at the end here, Byron Buxton. Missed start of the season, first three or four games with an injury, you know, because Byron Buxton misses a lot of games due to injury, and that started again this year. He comes back, he has just a couple hits, and he's been struggling out of the gate. What do you think about Buxton?
Yeah, I think so far it has been kind of the Cal Ripken Jr. of the injured list. But as far as what he's doing on the field, I'm not worried about it. He missed the time with the injury. He's going to get his timing down. His defense is always going to be elite. Even if he doesn't produce offensively like he did in 2019 when he was healthy, his defense alone makes him incredibly valuable. I know the Twins aren't a big stealing team, but even just having his speed on the base pass when he does get on base, you know, creates a lot of problems. So even if the bat doesn't fully come around where he's this elite level hitter, just everything else he does on the diamond is very valuable to the team. And so because of that, I'm not really worried about Byron Buxton. If he can just stay healthy, start every game in center field, hit in the nine hole, he's just adding value alone by just being on the field, essentially.
Right. And also took me a minute to get that John Heyman reference. That was a good one. that was a good bad tweet from him. But yeah, Buxton's speed and fielding, obviously, by itself, will just keep him in the lineup. He could hit 220. And also the addition of the other eight excellent hitters in this lineup also allow him to be able to hit 220 and be the greatest fielder in baseball. Like, the Twins can afford one average hitter in their lineup. Like, they'll be fine. And yeah, as you said, his speed and fielding will make up for it by a lot. His just on the bases, even if he got zero stolen bases, he's still, the pitchers focus more on him than the batter at times. It's crazy. So,
and even not even just stolen bases, you know, if he's on first base and there's, you know, a ball in the gap, he's scoring. This is not even a question about it.
Yeah, he's scored from first on a couple singles last year. Like, he's fastest guy in baseball.
Exactly.
I don't know if statistics prove that, but in my opinion, from just watching him, he's scary out there. So.
And we already saw, I mean, obviously we've seen the impact of his defense every time he's out there, but we already seen it already in 2020. I forget what game it was against Cleveland, but that play he made in the right center field gap. And I thought off the bat, I thought that ball was going to get down. And Byron just gets out there and catches this thing basket style, you know, before he falls over. Any other good major league center fielder is probably going to have to lay out for that ball. And Byron catches it on the run.
Yep, for sure. Like the substitution of him for Jake Cave, like Cave will provide you with more offense. He might get a couple more hits every couple games, but Byron Buxton's defense will, in my opinion, win you more games than Jake Cave's superior offense. So it's good to have Buxton back out there. I'm not worried just because I'm not sure what I expected. I don't expect him to be a 300 hitter or anything. Like he was, him and Brios both had these same sky high expectations.
And Miguel Sano.
Yeah, Sano as well. All three of them were supposed to be the huge big three of baseball, but.
Yeah. I remember when I was living out in San Francisco, you know, you turn on MLB Network and all the talk was all the promising potential the Twins have with Barrios, Sano, and Buxton.
Yeah, for sure. That was life as a Twins fan in the horrible years of 2011 to about 2017. It was just wait for these guys to show up and everything will be, you know, you'll win four World Series in a row once these guys are going. And that was the promise, you know, as we were losing 100 games a year here. But
I guess the promise the thing is, too, is, you know, they're still young. It's not like we're talking about guys that are now entering, like, the last years of their prime. We're talking about guys that are still in their prime years with more prime years to come. So there's still the potential there for them to get better. How much better is to be determined. But the potential is still there, and they have years to do it. And they could very well still turn out to be a very potent threat, just those three by themselves, combined with Jorge Polanco and Max Kepler and Eddie Rosario, and the list goes on.
Right. Yeah, it's just, they're very good players, all of them. It's just looked at not always as that just because of how good they were supposed to be. Like, they were supposed to be Mike Trout, Anthony Rendon, and, you know, Jacob deGrom, but instead they're just three really good baseball players.
Right. Hey, at least they're not Jurickson and Profar.
Yeah, exactly. Like, it's not like they were just prospects that didn't turn out well at all. Like, a lot of prospects are. Like, the Twins still got three great players out of it. I think that's just fine.
Yeah, they're in a really good position, and just the supporting cast around them as well is really good. And like we said at the beginning of this, this is a very special team, and they have a tremendous amount of talent, and they're a lot of fun to watch.
Exactly. So that's the end of that segment. You got any more there? You ready to move on?
Well, I think we can pivot and talk a little bit about some surprises so far early on.
Right.
You know, I really like – I'm shocked by what Alex Avila has done at the plate and his pitch framing. Maybe I just haven't paid close enough attention to Alex Avila. I know he's been an all-star at one point, but he was also released by his dad. So, you know, there's some questions there when they signed him.
He's
surprised me. I almost kind of look forward to his at-bats now when he's in the game, which – if you had asked me before the season started, are you excited about Alex Avila? I wouldn't know how to answer that.
So, he's been
a nice, pleasant surprise.
How awkward is Christmas dinner after you get released by your own dad?
Yeah, like, hey, man.
Yeah, thanks for firing me. Yeah.
Yeah.
Trying to find a job.
Yeah. Got to go to the unemployment line now. Jeez, dad.
Yeah, what the heck. But yeah, as you said, Avila's been great. His offense has been like better than I expected. And I think he's going to surprise us with the offense all year, especially with the Twins' rest and recovery ways and just putting him only in matchups that he will succeed against for the most part. Because that's – he'll play a good amount, just like Castro did and Garver. Garver was one of the best catchers ever last year and played like 93 games. So
97. We were talking about Garver earlier. This is, I guess, interesting kind of question to throw out there.
Right.
We're way too early to make these kind of assumptions, but let's do it anyway. If Mitch Garver continues to struggle and Alex Avila continues to play well, at what point do you kind of say, hey, we're going to roll with Alex Avila?
Yeah, that's a good question. A 60-game season, do you go to like a 50-50 split soon? Like, I would expect that to be implemented very soon. Like, Avila against righties could be very dangerous, and Garver is much more dangerous against lefties. Like, do you go 50-50 soon? It's going
to
be interesting.
Yeah, that'll be an interesting development to kind of continue to watch. And it all just kind of depends on Garver and whether or not he can
get
back to resembling something of what he did in 2019.
Yeah. So, yeah, Avila's been up there. Cave has played just a few games. Bucks in return just took that starting spot right back. Everyone knew he would no matter how well Cave played. But Cave was still very surprising. Came out, had the bases loaded single, and then he grand slam against the White Sox, which – that was fun. So, you know, Cave's been great. And his fielding has improved a lot. Marty Gellner talked about on the broadcast that he focused, like, all offseason on his fielding just because last year it was abysmal. Like, you noticed it every time he was out there. So I'm glad to see his defense improve. And his offense has always been – it's always been there. It's really just spotlighted this year so far.
Absolutely, yeah. But Jake Cave has been a really nice surprise offensively in the early going here. I think he first got brought up was it 2018?
Yeah,
2018. I liked him off the bat. I was like, hey, this guy has some nice tools to him, and he's got some speed. He played decent defense, left-handed hitter. But yeah, what he's done so far offensively has been a really nice surprise, and it'll be interesting to see how they kind of work him into the lineup more often if he continues to hit like this. But there's really not a lot of room because Rosario is playing well. I mean, Kepler is going to be an everyday guy in right field. There's really no way around that. But yeah, Jake Cave has been a nice surprise.
Yeah, for sure. Good problem to have here for the Twins. They got outfield filled. They got Larnick and Kirilloff coming up, and then they got Jake Cave and still fighting for a spot along with, you know, you can add in Lamont Wade and others in there too. But yeah, the Twins outfield's loaded for years to come.
Certainly. And then the last surprise, not just for me, I think just around baseball, in Twins territory, but across the league, has been how well the Twins bullpen's pitching right now.
Oh, absolutely. You got Rogers, of course, Duffy, May, Romo as the big four. Then you toss in guys like Stashak, who's just been excellent to start of the season. Littell has struggled, and did I miss? He didn't go on the IL. That was Homer Bailey. Bailey. Yeah, okay, Bailey. Wrong one. But yeah,
who looks like Christian Bale?
Which... I love Bailey, man. It's too bad.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, overall, the pitching staff, I mean, Kenta Maeda has looked really sharp. He had some good years with the Dodgers, but I mean, it's two starts, so let's not get too far ahead of ourselves.
Yeah.
But he has looked phenomenal in his two starts with the Twins. Great acquisition. Yes, we all love Brewster Gatterall and his 100 mile an hour fastballs, but Kenta Maeda helps the Twins tremendously right now in 2020. And it's been a lot of fun to see him pitch, and you have this confidence when he takes the mound now.
For sure. Like, he's been a nice surprise. He was traded for and then not really talked about for a while, but he was a big acquisition for the Twins, like just adding that stability in the rotation. And especially with Odorizzi missing the start of the season, having Maeda there is huge. Like, if Twins didn't make that trade, the stability in the rotation wouldn't be there as much. You'd be throwing Thorpe and Smeltzer in there, not really sure who's going to stick. But with Maeda, you have room to put them both in the bullpen, make a opener start like Smeltzer did today, sort of. And you got a lot of room to do what you want to do. It's been the rotation and bullpen have both been very surprisingly excellent.
Yep. And then Randy Dobnak, what he's done far is incredible.
Oh yeah, you hear the Uber driver stories all the time, but he's turned into just a great pitcher. He's qualified among 25 innings pitched qualified. He's got the lowest ERA of all time. So
I love his story. I love when he takes it now. I love everything about Randy Dobnak. I just love to root for the guy. It's an incredible story, and he's earning every start that he gets, and he just continues to throw well. And a feel good. It's beyond just a feel good story. I mean, you're now talking about a very legitimate, almost borderline dominant major league pitcher.
Right. I was going to say the story of Randy Dobnak is becoming just the story of a really solid pitcher that just kind of came out of nowhere, but it's not just wow, who's this guy? He's kind of cool. It's now it's Randy Dobnak. He's going to go give your team six innings and look great doing it. So,
and he looks like a Randy.
absolutely. There's no one who has a more look to their name than Randy Dobnak. No doubt.
The Fu Manchu, the glasses, the whole thing. He's a Randy. So I love it.
Yeah, absolutely. I love him. Love watching him play. Glad he's on the Twins. But yeah, that wraps up that part. You got anything more to add, or are we good there?
I think we've touched on everything on that segment.
All right, cool. So yeah, moving on then. The Twins tomorrow will move on to play the Pirates, who are 2-7. They go from absolutely dominating the Cardinals and Indians to playing the Pittsburgh Pirates, who are managed by old friend from the Minnesota Twins, Derek Shelton. So that'll be fun to reunite with him and hopefully get a 3-game sweep. It'll be tomorrow, Derek Holland versus Lewis Thorpe, who's actually making a spot start tomorrow. So, yeah, Holland versus Thorpe.
Yeah, I think it's a 4-game series, isn't it? It's home and home.
Is it? Oh, okay.
Two in Minnesota, two in Pittsburgh.
That's right.
I think on paper going into this series, there's absolutely no reason why the Twins should not take at least 3 out of 4.
Yeah.
I think the only concern might be is if you kind of let up, maybe you lose focus a little bit. You know you're playing against a team like Pittsburgh. You just had a really good series against a good team in Cleveland. So as long as they can bring that intensity, stay focused, play their game, nothing to worry about with this series. They should take 3 out of 4 and then go on. Is it Kansas City next?
I'm checking right now, but as you said, it is. It's 4-4 against Pittsburgh, 3 against Kansas City, and then 3 against Milwaukee. The schedule for the Twins is all season will be nothing crazy. It'll be the Pirates, who are 2-7, and the Royals, who are the Kansas City Royals. I mean, the Detroit Tigers are coming in 5-5 eventually. We'll have to face them with their -11 run differential, but we'll ignore that. They're a really good team, guys.
CJ Cron and Jonathan Schoen, man. They're going to make us pay for letting them walk.
I think about it this way. CJ Cron and Jonathan Schoen are probably two of their top offensive players, and they wouldn't even crack the Twins lineup. That's just insane.
Yep.
Yeah.
I like CJ Cron, but I would rather have Josh Donaldson.
Yeah, exactly. They replaced CJ Cron with Josh Donaldson. Come on. The greatest offensive team in baseball replaced CJ Cron with Josh Donaldson. That's just unfair.
Upgrade.
Yeah.
Thank you, Beyonce. Yeah.
Thorpe Holland, and the Twins haven't released all their starters, but the Pirates will have Joe Musgrove after that, who is a solid starting pitcher, and then Trevor Williams in the third game. And they do not have their fourth game starter, but Twins, they don't even know who they're throwing out there for any game. They're we'll throw anyone, win the game, doesn't matter. So I think that's what the Twins said.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, but it's working. The Twins pitching is getting the job done. with Tyler Clipper doing the opening today, and Smeltzer coming in. They shut down Cleveland. Really not at all worried about Minnesota pitching. Whoever they throw out there, so far they've done a good job, and the offense continues to hit. Again, this series against Pittsburgh, on paper, they should take 3 out of 4. Only way they don't is if they lose focus and kind of play down to their opponent.
Exactly. Yeah. And I mean, especially after coming out from those Cardinals and Indian series, we've seen what the Twins can do, what they're capable of. Now just go. It's hard to say they should sweep a 4-game series just because that's putting expectations too high, but talent wise, yeah, that should be what they do, but you never know. Because teams win games sometimes, but yeah.
Take 2 out of 4 is okay. Right. They are off to a 7-2 start. Not worried about it, but I think, they should at least take 3 out of 4.
For sure. So, yeah, moving on. I mean, you got anything more about the series? Do you think we should move on there?
No, I think, we've covered that.
All right. So we can move on. You did a Twitter poll about whether you'd rather have your team suck and you know it's going to suck, so the Detroit Tigers, Baltimore Orioles, or whether you'd rather watch a team that has high expectations and then absolutely just falters and doesn't even make the playoffs. Like, for Twins fans, the 2016 Twins or the 2018 Twins? Or for a Giants fan, what years would those be?
11, 13, 15.
Yeah,
that's when they sucked.
That was horrible in the years between those. All they did was win the World Series every single year.
Right, so you come off a World Series title and you're defending champs and you come into it and you're all excited and you're reigning Rookie of the Year, Buster Posey, snaps his ankle in half in early May, and now you have Eli Whiteside and Chris Stewart catching games for you. And then you trade Zach Wheeler for Carlos Beltran.
Yeah, so the question is, would you rather have the, 2011 Giants or the 2020 Giants, where you're just like, I guess the Giants have started out hot this year, but you know what I mean, where you know they're not supposed to be good, and what would you rather watch? For me, I've been through the knowing your team's going to suck. It sucks, man. I'd rather have high expectations and then your team at least somewhat competitive and then miss the playoffs. 2016 was the wildest year because they were expected to make the playoffs, the Twins, and they lost 102 games. That's the worst of this scenario. But yeah, the 2018 Twins where you expect them to make the playoffs and then they go 78-84 or something. That's all right. It sucks, but wait, does that even make sense? Does that add up to 162? Yeah, I think it does.
So.
Yeah, that was their record. Okay, got it. But yeah, I'd rather have the high expectations than miss the playoffs. What do you think?
I'd rather know your team's not going to be very good. I think before this year, I probably would have agreed with you. But being a Giants fan as well, I watch the Giants every night. And just very low expectations. I don't expect this team to do anything. But then they win and they put up runs and it's exciting. And you kind of get into the underdog story. And you don't have this feeling where you're dying with every loss. Right. If the Twins were to drop 3 in a row right now, that would hurt. The Giants drop 3 in a row, you're just kind of we know they're not very good.
Yeah. With the team you know is going to suck just year in and year out, it doesn't even make none of it's fun. At least with the team you know is, or you have high expectations for, the off season's fun and some games are interesting, for a few months. But yeah, it's with losing every year, nothing's enjoyable until you finally get that Byron Buxton, Barrios, Sano trio to get called up just to not perform like they expected, but it is what it is.
what a justification. It is what it is.
That's how I've gotten to be a Twins fan.
That's fair. I was a little surprised by the responses on Twitter. I think overwhelming majority said they'd rather, it's worse to have high expectations and fail. Really? I think it was close to 80% of the people who responded to the poll.
Wow.
Said that was worse. And I kind of agree with that. Nothing's worse than going into a season, you think that your team is going to, defend their title or be a playoff team, and come October, your team's not playing.
Yeah, I get where you're coming from. I mean, if they miss the playoffs by 1 or 2 games, does that still count, or is that a different scenario?
I think if you're going into the season and the expectation is to be a playoff team, to contend for a title, and then you miss the playoffs, that's failure. that hurts.
All right, I would much rather like lose the playoffs by one or two games than go out knowing you're going to lose 100 games. Then I'm definitely on the opposite side of you.
Okay, well that's the beauty of this, I suppose.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. Hopefully,
and
I don't know. Should have
most
to happen.
Most of Twitter, most of Twitter agrees with me, so I'm going to take solace in that.
Yeah, well, people on Twitter aren't always very smart, are they?
I'm not going to comment on that.
Because I'm trashing my own audience because I retweeted it. Probably got a lot of that, but whoops.
Exactly. So I'm going to just refrain from answering that question.
Ah, they're all laughing listening to this. They know I love them. Oh, well. Anyway. Anyway, yeah, let's touch on that. I think that's about all we got. Do you have any more?
No, nothing comes up. I'm just excited to get the series going against Pittsburgh, and then get on the road, go down to Kansas City, take care of business there. Milwaukee series could be interesting, but I don't think they're that much of a threat. So
no.
I think the Twins are set up in a great position to take an even much bigger lead in the Central, even though winning the division doesn't really mean all that much in 2020.
Yeah,
but it is nice to at least say, hey, we won the division.
Yeah, exactly.
2 years in a row, right?
For sure.
There's something to be said for that, even in this weird truncated 60-game schedule. Very happy to have baseball back, as I think a lot of people are, even though it is kind of weird with the COVID situation. It's just it's really nice to, you get off work, come home, and turn on a ball game, and you got Dick Brimmer and Justin Morneau serenading you, and you got a ball game. It's great. Baseball's back. We love it.
Absolutely. That's been just the best part of it, just being able to get back to a little bit of normalcy with just baseball. Like, it's just great. But yeah, when we talk next week, hopefully we'll be talking about baseball being played and not baseball being shut down. It'll be the 4 against Pittsburgh and then the 3 against Kansas City that we'll be able to recap. So yeah,
it's going to take a lot for baseball to shut down. One thing that I still am curious about is what's the point of these taxi squads if we're not using them to replace players that test positive. I thought that was the whole point of this, is to have a fluid roster. So if a guy gets put on the shelf because he's tested positive, well, we have someone else who's ready and able to come in and fill in for them. And it doesn't seem like that's how it's being used right now.
Yeah, they set up this 60-player roster. It hasn't been utilized a ton. I mean, maybe it just has been underrated, or we haven't seen it in news. But, yeah, I agree with you. We've not seen that being used at all. So I'd love to see that implicated more, just because that's how we're going to have to do it if we want to have baseball this year.
And maybe that'll allow us to see Royce Lewis and Alex Kirilloff.
Yeah, that'd be pretty cool as well. That's always a benefit.
Think about this for a second. Here we are all night. We've been talking about how just dominating this Minnesota Twins team is. And, oh, hey, by the way, we also have Royce Lewis and Alex Kirilloff just waiting for their opportunity.
Yep. Two top 30 prospects in baseball, with also Trevor Larnach and Jordan Balazovic. Also just hanging out down there, who will emerge soon. They'll emerge soon on the national scale. They've got 4 just excellent prospects. It's too bad there's no season this year just to have them develop. But yeah, they're minor league. Like, it's crazy. They've got one of the best teams in baseball and one of the best minor league organizations in baseball. They've just built it up so well.
And a very young, talented core with guys that are locked up. I mean, the contracts that they gave out to Polanco and Kepler are absolute steals.
Yeah, well, who's their agent? Like, what the heck?
Yeah, like, can we renegotiate this?
Yeah.
Like, I see this thing.
$5 million this year each.
Right, and I saw this thing. I forget who put it out there, but over the last, like, rolling 162 games, Max Kepler has been better than Aaron Judge.
Yeah, that was Fox Sports North tweeted that out. Of course, they used
the
stats of, like, runs scored and stuff to put it.
Wow.
Damper it a little bit. I mean, yeah, he's hit more home runs. He has a better batting average. So he's been competing with Aaron Judge at least, yeah.
Yes, but, and Aaron Judge hit his home run for the 5th night in a row. So clearly he's darn good. Yeah, tonight. I think he hit 2 tonight, actually.
Yeah, he's better than Max Kepler in my book. But
Well, hey, speaking of Aaron Judge, I guess we'll go a shout-out to the Motherlode League in Northern California, where I grew up. We were up playing against Aaron Judge. So even though he's a Yankee, I gotta love Aaron Judge a little bit.
I can only imagine playing that guy in like high school or college or whatever. That's
Terrifying.
Scary was like fear.
Yeah. Like I played third base and he'd come up just this imposing figure and I'm like heels on the grass looking at my coach like, please take me out.
Yeah, no, that's awful. Oh my God. I can't pitching against him. Just be like, all right, I know you're gonna hit a bomb. Just like, don't embarrass me too much.
Oh, and he pitched and threw absolute gas.
Really?
So yeah.
Wow. Well, I'd say we got a good 57 minutes in here. Wow. 55. Yeah. All right. We'll wrap this up here. Good podcast. Good first episode with you as the co-host here. How do you think it went? I think it went great.
Yeah, I had a great time, and I'm happy to just be on this show on a regular basis, and I'm looking forward to see where we can take this.
For sure. So next week should be fun. We'll be back same time, upload Monday morning, and see you next week, hopefully, if you tune back in. Thanks for listening.
Have a good night.